and T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580, as well as on 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. We're also online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Well, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have questions about diet, nutrition, give us a call and talk to Susan. Here are the numbers. In the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And she's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find her online at www.nutritiononthemove.net. Questions about diet, nutrition, give us a call. They're invited this afternoon. Your questions. Again, the phone number is 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you on this nice cold day.
Yeah. First day of climatological winter.
I believe it.
It feels like it, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
So did you have a good holiday?
I did. Enjoyed the Thanksgiving food.
Yeah.
And that's half the fun.
Half the fun. And today in the Daily Illini, they did a little piece, leftovers, and the University of Illinois Activities and Recreation Center is mentioned. Mm-hmm. There's an instructional kitchen as part of this center, which is also known as ARC.
Right.
And you teach there.
Right. I do some teaching there. It's really a fantastic kitchen, and there are programs that are open to anybody. So anyone in the community who wants to come in and come to one of the cooking classes, or there are classes that we started this semester that are combination classes in terms of nutrition education, for example, heart healthy foods, where you'll learn how to cook some fun things for cardiovascular health, but also learn about what to eat for heart health, for example. And then just classes on quick menu items. There are some classes a little bit more geared towards students, quick lunches on the go, or folks who are working on campus. But there'll be new classes starting up this next semester as well. So all the classes are listed on the campus recreation our website, I should say, and campusrec.uiuc.edu, I believe, is that. And Stacy Krozik, who's mentioned in here, is a dietitian, one of my colleagues, and she teaches a lot of the classes over there. But part of what Campus Recreation is trying to do is really develop more of a full wellness program on campus, or be part of that at least. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing some work over there with anybody who's a Campus Rec member if they want to have nutrition education. Or I have my student interns over there, so the student dietitians who are also listed in the paper. Some of Stacy's interns and some of my interns spend hours over there and answer questions and have tastings. But the kitchen is really nice. It's a state-of-the-art kitchen. And last week, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, we had about 50 of the U of I athletes in one night. So we had them divided out between 7 and 8 o'clock. And then the next night, some of my students ran a class for fraternity and sorority mixer. And so the think student groups on campus are getting hold of campus recreation and coordinating different programs. So it's really neat. It's a great way, I feel, at least as a dietitian, it's so important to get your hands on the food. And you can look at recipes and things, but when you really get in there and make some things that aren't difficult to make, which is what we're trying to do, people are just more apt to eat healthy because they can see that it's not that hard.
Yeah. Now, for classes that would be geared more to community members, how long do they run?
Most of the classes that we set up this semester, and we didn't have a lot of response yet this semester from the open classes, but I think it's because it's new and people are getting used to that. But generally, those run from 7 to 9 o'clock. And so typically what we do in the classes is we may have 4 or 5 different foods that we're going to make, and then people in the class will divide up into groups. So there may be 3 or 4 people working on the main dish and 3 or 4 people on the appetizer, and then we'll switch around and everybody gets a chance to make something, and then we come together at the end of the class and eat together, which is a lot of fun, and then do some education while the food is maybe baking or cooking, and we can talk a little bit about why these foods are of particular interest. And so I think eventually we want to get into where we're working more with local farmers and doing some local food-based classes as well. And so it's really a neat opportunity. So it's great that Campus Rec saw the need to add in there, you know, more for nutrition and food when the ARC was redone. It's a fabulous building. So
yeah. Now, is it the – I haven't been over there yet. I really need to get out more.
Yeah.
But it used to be called IMPE,
right?
The Intramural Physical Education Building. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time there. But then when it was closed down for a while, I guess I got out of the habit.
Right,
so
right.
So now I need to get over to the ARC, the Activities and Recreation Center. Are there fees for these classes?
Yes, there are fees for the classes. They vary depending upon the class, and there may be a new fee structure come next semester too. So there are some things that are free. We've had tastings throughout the semester where we may make a couple items from an upcoming class and come in for tastings, and so some of the things are free. But most of the classes, there's a fee depending upon how involved the class is and the food costs and those kinds of things.
Yeah. You mentioned athletes taking classes, sororities and fraternities, and other students. One of the things that you mentioned was lunch on the go.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of things are students interested in?
Well, I think they're interested in two things in particular right now. What can you make that's fast, and what can you make that's pretty inexpensive, right? And so All the foods that we set up actually are pretty low cost. I mean, this isn't really a gourmet cooking class. Stacy and I will both say, as the two main folks leading these classes, that we're not chefs, but we are dietitians who also think it's really important to cook and eat well and enjoy eating. And so, you know, the classes generally are healthy foods, and they're generally pretty low cost. One of the classes I did a couple weeks ago, we had, for example, just to give you an idea, we had coconut chicken fingers, which, of course, a lot of college students like chicken fingers, but you can make them yourself much healthier. And I think for a 3 or 4 ounce portion, it ended up being about $1.50 for that serving, which is actually really low cost for a high-quality protein serving. And I think the whole meal between the meat and the vegetables and a dessert, and we made chili, the whole meal was about $5 for the full meal. So there are ways that really you can cook even that food prices are higher now and still be healthy and keep it under a certain budget.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. Listeners, my name is Celeste Quinn, and I welcome your questions and comments for us this afternoon. If you have questions for Susan, give us a call and talk to her. She'll be happy to help you out. In the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And you have a hand up for us this month, which is healthy holiday recipe substitutions. This could come in handy.
Yes, it could.
So if folks would like to get this handout this month, send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to the Afternoon Magazine, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. And we'll give this information again later in the interview. So can you give us some idea about what kind of things we're swapping out?
Right.
Here?
Well, I think you know, when we think about healthy holiday eating, a lot of people get a bit nervous around this time of year, worried that they may be going to gain some weight and they'll be going to a lot of parties and eating more than they're usually eating. And so I think there are some strategies we can think about, whether you're making food yourself or whether you're going out a lot more, where you can still eat healthy and enjoy eating. And there are some simple things that many people might already be doing. But, for example, in recipes, particularly baked goods, because we do tend to see a lot of baked goods and consume a lot of baked goods in the next month for sure. Simple things like using 2 egg whites for 1 egg. Now, it doesn't sound like a big difference, but if you're going to be making several different things, then that cuts down on the saturated fat and you can still get the protein in there, which is helpful. Or just using the egg substitute, which you can get about a half cup of an egg substitute is about the same as 2 eggs. So that's one way you can cut down. I did bring a few recipes and things that looked good to me that were also maybe appropriate for someone with diabetes as well, that were a little bit lower carbohydrate and lower sugar recipes. And one of the things that we can do, too, for sugar in a recipe, you can use some of the sugar substitutes. You know, for example, the Splenda sugar blend, and some of those you can do one for one to really cut down quite a bit on the calories. If you think you cut a cup of sugar out, that's a big difference as far as the calories. And then I think just little things in recipes, you know, even if something calls for chocolate chips, I would get the best chocolate chips that really taste good and maybe use half the amount. Mm-hmm. If something calls for nuts, generally you can toast the nuts and really brings out the flavor and use less. And of course, nuts are really good for us. It just ends up being a lot of calories too. Even simple things, if you always use white flour, you could generally substitute half of that flour as whole wheat. And so that bumps up the fiber. And of course, when we've got more fiber in a recipe, usually it's more satisfying. We may not tend to eat as much. And then just really being aware that a lot of recipes around the holidays call for sour cream, cream cheese, things like that, that most of the time you can use fat-free versions of those, or at least a low-fat version. And that cuts out quite a bit of calories, but still has the flavor. Even in the whipping cream and you can use the non-fat versions of a lot of those, and they work pretty well in products. And so many of our common type foods that we would eat over the holidays can really be cut down quite a bit as far as fat and sugar.
Okay. And I guess also when you're substituting things like fat-free cream cheese, if it's going together with other flavors, you really don't seem to miss the fat.
Right, exactly. I think the one thing to be careful with when you're baking or if you're needing to melt something or things like that, sometimes the fat-free cheese doesn't work as well. And maybe some of those, but like you're saying, in a dip or when you mix all these other spices and herbs and flavorings in, usually the fat-free versions are great. Even if you're making a big – I tend to make a lot of lasagna during this time of year and kind of the big pasta dishes, and the fat-free ricotta cheese is fine. There's no problem using that as opposed to one with a little bit of fat or fat-free cottage cheese or things like that as well.
Yeah, I know that we've cut down at our house in the when we make pizza, we've gone for the 2% cheese now, and we don't really see any difference at all. Now, that's still fat, but it's less.
It's definitely
than the
less
full fat.
And that melts still, like you're saying. It's much that would be the type to use as opposed to fat-free generally for something like that, because it still has the ability to melt. That's one of the, you know, one of the differences when we look at some of these sugar substitutes. You know, often it would, some of these sugar substitutes can give the sweetener approach to it, but some of the other things, like maybe the texture would be different, the volume is different, the browning might be a little bit different. And so depending upon what you're looking for in a product, you do have to be aware of whether or not, you know, it's really going to work to use some of those things. But as I was pulling a few recipes together that looked good, you know, there are so many more online to choose from. And I get every month I get a diabetic cooking recipes. And this one talks about delicious desserts and things. And there are just so many ways that you can use not only just less sugar, but also then some of the substitutes if you're trying to sweeten things too.
Okay, very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She is the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite your questions for Susan this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 3333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Maybe you have a tip you would like to share with us. I see one here on healthy holiday recipe substitutions that actually a caller some time back called in with this suggestion, and that is to cut your butter by half and blend with olive oil.
It works great.
Yeah.
That's super.
So let's take a call now. A listener coming in on line one, a caller in Urbana, for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Did I miss hearing you mention making yogurt cheese at home to use in recipes?
Nope.
No, but please let's talk about it. That's a great idea.
I have a recipe that my mother made for many years, and I've adapted. It's called German sour cream twist, but they no longer have any sour cream in them. Mm-hmm. And I use either non-fat cottage cheese that I've whipped up in the blender, or I make yogurt cheese ahead of time just by lining a colander with cheesecloth and letting it drain for a while. And you can get varying consistencies for that. And I also use, I haven't made them in a while. I can't remember what proportion I've used. I've been experimenting on the few times that I bake anymore with the white whole wheat flour, which seems to be lighter than the standard whole wheat flour.
Yes.
And I can tell the difference between the original recipe and my revised reduced-fat recipe. But people who haven't had them before think they're marvelous and gobble them right down. So to me, they don't taste quite as good, but they're certainly very close to, they're certainly very acceptable. So I think the point that I'm trying to make is that, recipes are just what people happen to come up with in experimenting around. And we can create a new recipe with our modifications and have them be just as good. Do you have any thoughts about using the white whole wheat?
Well, I've used that before as well, and like you say, I think sometimes it makes a bit of a softer product, and it's still a great benefit to use as opposed to full white flour. But I do think that it tends to work better, and maybe I guess when you're thinking about how you can make a softer product or a product that's not quite as heavy, it works great in those instances. So, and it's a way to kind of take the step up, you know, to get some more whole grain in there. And that's a big part of it. Like you're mentioning, things that you're doing, let's say making that yogurt cheese and you know, one thing we need to look at with recipe modifications or different things that we're doing at home is how can you do things that also enhance the nutritional quality? So, for example, you know, it is great if we can use some different sweeteners and cut the calories a little bit in desserts, but we still have to make sure we're not eating so much of it. But adding things like these yogurt cheese and using more whole wheat flour and things like that, I think are really great, a great benefit because you're eating well, you're making new products, but you're enhancing the nutrition too, which is great.
And a number of cookbooks with really good light recipes. There was sometime maybe a year or so ago, WILL had on the authors of America's Test Kitchen mm-hmm. Family Cookbook, and I bought the cookbook just on the strength of a recipe which was light guacamole, which substitutes for some of the avocado, cooked, blended up lima beans.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I've served that to people, and they haven't noticed that there's lima beans in there
mm-hmm.
and a lot less avocado. So you still get some of the benefits of the avocado, and you still feel like you're celebrating. But you have a lot of nice fiber in there and some reduced fat, and you can, you know, it's the kind of thing where you tend to eat more than just a tablespoon or two.
Right, right.
So it's one of those things that's good to just add to one's repertoire because it's just not all that difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Yeah, there's a nice section in that cookbook, The American Family The American Test Kitchen Family Cookbook. It's
okay.
A big binder, you know, so you can
yeah.
open it up and take the recipe out. But there's a whole section in there on low-fat, low-calorie cooking. And those folks are pretty fussy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've seen the show on television,
yeah.
you see them do it over and over and over
mm-hmm.
again. And they've got a very tough boss to please. So if it doesn't get Chris Kimball's okay, it's not going anywhere.
So those are going to be pretty good recipes. Yeah.
And that's where I learned that if you're mixing mayonnaise with something, go for the fat-free the low-fat, because if it's mixed with tuna fish, chances are you're really not going to notice it. But if you're just having mayonnaise on the sandwich plain, then you might notice a difference. You might notice a difference in the taste and texture and so on. So So thanks to that caller in Urbana this afternoon. Other calls are invited. Doing not very much traffic here yet this afternoon, Susan.
That's
Susan
Kant
Kundrat is our guest this afternoon. She's a registered dietitian, and we're taking your calls, listeners, comments, questions, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. No one waiting at the moment. 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, I think that you must have made an impact, or you're making an impact, on students at the University of Illinois, because I noticed that over time I've seen a number of articles on food and cooking in the Daily Illini. Mm-hmm. And one that I'm recalling recently made note of what seems to be a turning away from high sodium products and mixes and things that are, you know, instant and toward cooking. And I thought this was really interesting to see in a college newspaper. One of the things that you can get away from to some extent is sodium when you go from scratch. Maybe we could talk a little bit about sodium, because we've just come through what I suspect is a pretty high sodium holiday.
Right.
What's the recommended daily limit for sodium?
Well, the general recommended limit is about 2,000 milligrams. And if you look at how much that is, you know, that'd be about a teaspoon of salt, you know, per day, which is not very much. And that would be included in everything you would eat, as well as what you would add, as well as the salt you'd add. So it's pretty low as far as the amount. I think the average American takes in about double that much sodium. And so we do know that there's not a reason for everybody to watch their sodium. For example, since I do work a lot with athletes, and particularly here at the U of I, you know, when they're out and sweating for 2 hours at a practice and sweating hard, they need extra salt or they're going to be in trouble. So they should have double or maybe triple the recommended amount, or they're not going to be able to, you know, make it, since they're losing so much sodium. But for the average person, 2,000 milligrams for most people is enough. And we do know that it's linked to high blood pressure. Not everybody who has high blood pressure is going to respond to sodium. In other words, there are people who can eat a lot of salt that won't affect their blood pressure. But for many people, it will affect their blood pressure. And we do know that it seems to be beneficial in trying to prevent getting high blood pressure, which is just so common as we get older, partly because people typically gain weight as they get older and they're less active, and a lot of other reasons besides diet. But but I think that, you know, sodium is something we just get used to having things very salty. One of my coworkers was saying the other day, he found out that he's been kind of watching his blood pressure and monitoring it for quite some time, and he's exercising well, but it still was high enough that his doctor finally put him on just a little bit of antihypertensive medication. And so now he's very motivated to get off that medication. So he's really watching his sodium intake. And he said within a week, he was very diligent, and I'd given him some ideas and things to do. And within a week, he really didn't want to have salty things. He said, boy, when he had one thing when he was out that was salty, it really bothered him because it seemed so salty. And he went out this weekend and ate at a Chinese restaurant and just asked them to put just a little teeny bit of soy sauce in. And they said, oh, fine, we'll put extra ginger. And they had other ideas for things that they added. And he said it was the best beef and broccoli he'd ever had in his whole life. So, you know, it is amazing, because you start adding these other spices and things and herbs, and food sometimes tastes a lot better because it doesn't taste so salty.
Yeah. I would imagine that it's pretty easy to cut back, and it's pretty easy to overdo. either one.
Yes.
So just watching it, I suppose, for a few days, watching the labels on the things that you enjoy, because sometimes there are things that have a lot of sodium in them. Maybe they don't even really taste salty to us because maybe we're used to that.
Right.
But watch it for a few days. Take a look at your labels of the things that you enjoy and see where you stand.
2,300 milligrams of sodium is about what's in a teaspoon of salt, which is sodium chloride. So that amount gives you an idea, and you'll see if you start looking at labels, particularly processed foods, that many things are 500 milligrams or 1,000 milligrams per serving. And, of course, many times we Americans like to eat more than one serving of something, so we could easily, in a frozen product of eating two servings, get the full daily amount. So I think the other thing we're finding that I think is very interesting with blood pressure is it's not just the sodium, but what are all these other minerals and other nutrients that we could eat that might actually help? In other words, we know that eating more potassium, most people will benefit from that. That'll help bring blood pressure down if they increase the potassium. And so naturally, just increasing fruits and vegetables for many of us will definitely boost the potassium in our diet. And that's why a lot of the research that's come out that's looked at these portfolio diets or diets where they're kind of looking at which foods to add together in a combination might be beneficial. Just bumping up the fruits and vegetables may help with blood pressure regulation as well as calcium. So we never used to think of calcium as a big factor in blood pressure, but now we know that getting adequate calcium for many people helps manage blood pressure, among other things. So there are many, many reasons to just getting back to this whole idea that we always talk about, which is balanced eating and really getting back to more fruits and vegetables and choosing them wisely and choosing a variety so that we can get some of these other key nutrients. We're not eating the same ones all the time.
Yeah, variety seems to be really key. Are there things that come to mind for good sources of potassium and calcium in veggies?
Well, I guess we always think of bananas for potassium, and they are very high. But something that's really high people don't know is orange juice is very high in potassium. And so citrus fruits, but particularly orange juice itself, is very high. Apricots are very high in potassium, so they're a good source. And some of the dark orange vegetables are higher. And with calcium, we think of things like spinach has some, kale has some. Even legumes are a pretty good source of calcium, as well as some other vitamins and minerals that are important. And the question is really how well they're absorbed, because you get some of the fibers that come along with these fruits and vegetables and beans, and that can decrease the absorption of the mineral itself. But still, they would be great things to add. And so I tell my clients, even if you did have a banana and a little bit of orange juice in the morning and that you did that every day, boy, that's going to bump up your potassium considerably if that's something you consistently do as part of your diet. So that's a pretty simple thing and pretty ingrained in many American breakfasts that we might eat. So it's a matter of just remembering to have your produce. That's really, really helpful. I was thinking, too, about the caller who talked about the guacamole and how guacamole, it's actually, because of the color, it's a very festive thing to have. And the big concern, like you say, is it is high in calories and certainly has avocados are very good for us, but they do have a lot of calories, a lot of fat. But there are other things you can do, too. She mentioned the lima beans, which I'm going to try because I've never used the lima beans in. But you can also use green peas. You can use frozen green peas and soften those and just put those in a food processor. And they work really well to really brighten up the guacamole. You can mix it half and half with avocados. And you can also use edamame, the soybeans. And that works well, too, to bump up the fiber and the protein. And there are other recipes, too. One that I had pulled because I thought it looked very interesting, using avocados. Of course, we usually use lime juice, but also adding orange juice and some pineapple and sweetened pineapple juice, as well as the cilantro and cumin and hot pepper sauce. And I'm going to try that recipe because I found that as just a different way to make guacamole.
That sounds really good.
Doesn't that sound good? It's called citrus guacamole. So it has two medium avocados mashed, a half tablespoon of the lime juice, half tablespoon of orange juice, half tablespoon of unsweetened pineapple juice, quarter teaspoon of ground cumin, quarter cup of fresh cilantro chopped, a little bit of salt if you want it, and a teaspoon of hot pepper sauce if you like it spicy. And so the very little sodium in this, you know, only if you use a little pinch, it's very high in potassium. And it has 11 grams of fat, which is about 2 teaspoons of fat. But 10 of those grams are monounsaturated, which is very good fat, heart-healthy fat.
And what's a serving size?
Serving is 2 to 3 tablespoons, depending on the size of the avocado. So that's a, and again, that's not eating the whole thing, but
yeah.
But one thing that I think helps with guacamole is if you do have, you know, a whole thing cut up veggies, that you can actually dip those in there too. Or if you're going to have them on chips, you know, maybe get your serving size out of there and then put it on the chips right away so that you're not apt to
the frosting on the cake.
It is the frosting on the cake.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Let's take another call now. A listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about magnesium and whether it's of any benefit for preventing muscle cramps, and what foods or what are good sources for magnesium, and what other benefits are there for that mineral?
Well, magnesium, as you mentioned, for muscle cramps, it could be beneficial. Usually that's not the first thing we think of. That wouldn't be typically the reason somebody would have muscle cramps, but it certainly could be. Magnesium usually comes after, of course, first thing we think of is dehydration. Second thing we think of is low sodium, because sometimes if your salt is low in your diet or your sodium is low, you could have muscle cramps if you're sweating a lot. So those would be two things. And then it certainly might be related to magnesium or calcium or some of these other minerals as well, but probably not as apt to be. But we think of magnesium as being helpful perhaps with blood pressure too. I didn't mention that, but as well as calcium being helpful, and it may help lower blood pressure. There's been a lot of interest in magnesium with diabetes, and mainly because it's been found that in some cases, some people with diabetes might be low in magnesium. So I don't know that there's an exact link right now, but that's something that's being looked at too. And it's been used for years, maybe in helping with premenstrual syndrome. Again, I don't know that that's for sure, but that's something that's been looked at for a while. It has also been looked at as a supplement to help with exercise. And if people take extra magnesium, are they going to train harder? But really, the studies have not shown that that's beneficial. Mm-hmm. And of course, we think of magnesium being helpful along with calcium for bone strength. And so there are really a lot of good reasons. If you look at magnesium in food, then one thing I always think about is beans again. So beans and peas are pretty good sources. Spinach is a pretty good source of magnesium. Nuts and seeds, things like peanuts are good sources. Fish is a good source. Whole grains often have some magnesium, things like brown rice, that kind of thing. And just like you find calcium in milk products, generally magnesium follows that too and is in some of the milk products as well. So I think it's a mineral that probably we're going to find out more about, because I think it's one of those kind of like vitamin D. It was never really studied that much. And now we think about all the ways that we look at vitamin D and the benefit of vitamin D. But you may notice that in a lot of bone supplements now, you've got calcium and you've got magnesium now, as well as vitamin D. And some of them have vitamin K added because that's helpful with bone strength too. And so particularly in that area, I think magnesium is being looked at as well.
Does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome. Next, we go to a listener in Urbana on line two. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering if dried fruits, apples and apricots and so on, do they lose any of the minerals you were talking about? And then also another question on calcium supplements. Is it really bad to take it just once a day, the amount,
the total amount?
Yeah.
Well, calcium is best absorbed if you divide out the amounts that you take. So in other words, if you're taking 1,000 milligrams, it's best absorbed in about 500 to 600 milligrams at a time. Not to say you don't absorb it if you take 1,000 milligrams or your full amount at one time, but probably going to absorb more if you divide it in two doses. And that's why it's recommended. It's a real big mineral, and I think part of that is just its ability to be absorbed at one time. One of the things that's a little bit of a concern to me is you see now a lot of these multivitamins that contain 100% calcium or at least 50% calcium as well as iron and everything, and actually you get those big minerals in the same product at the same time, and probably they're going to decrease the absorption of either one of them or both of them, and so that's not necessarily good. So if you can spread them out, I would do that. I would spread out the calcium. And you were asking about
dried fruits and vegetables and their the stuff that they pack. If you take your, let's say, tomatoes and you dry them slowly mm-hmm. in an oven, you know, you've got oven roasted tomatoes, which are delicious. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that they would retain a lot of
yes.
their what they've got in the buff, so to speak.
Right.
Raw.
Well, many, like you say, many of them, if they're dried, then they're going to be, in some cases, even a more concentrated source. So let's take apricots, for example, which dried, they're very high in vitamin A. It's a well-absorbed form of vitamin A, and they also are real high in potassium. Sometimes they're higher in potassium because potassium may be used in, to help preserve it, too. And so that may be it's a little bit added at that point, too. But generally, dried fruits are pretty good. Generally, even frozen fruits and vegetables are actually pretty high nutritionally because they're very quickly frozen. And if they are cooked, they're cooked very quickly and then frozen right away. And so they're still going to be quite good sources of key vitamins and minerals. I think what happens is some vitamins and minerals might be a little bit more available if it's fresh, and some might be more available if they're cooked. And, you know, a good example is tomatoes. Fresh tomatoes are very high in vitamin C. They're high in lycopene, but if you actually put the tomatoes into a paste or into a sauce or even in ketchup, that lycopene is much more available, much better absorbed because it's been heated. So in some cases, heating a food will actually help you absorb that vitamin and mineral. And I think the take-home message from this is don't feel like you have to have everything fresh. Don't worry if you're cooking some things and wondering, you know, mm-hmm. what kind of nutrients you're getting, or if you have some things that are frozen. I think you're still going to probably get certain nutrients that you might be higher in a frozen product or a dried product than you would in fresh. But I think a good rule of thumb is to say, well, I'm trying to eat about 50% of my produce fresh if I can. And then the rest might be dried or canned. Even something like canned peaches is extremely high in beta carotene. So there's nothing wrong with eating those. And the big thing is that you really consume more produce. I think that's the bottom line.
Okay. And in the fruits that are in cans or jars, you would want to look for something that wouldn't be really syrupy, like a light syrup or packed in
its own juice.
Its own juice.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, packed in water or its own juice is probably best. And then if, you know, the concern sometimes is when it's packed in syrup, the bigger cans packed in syrup are often less expensive. And so if that's the way you get it, and particularly if you're not diabetic or don't need to watch real, real carefully with the sugars, then you can still drain those and rinse them. I do that all the time because they're often – they cost a lot less if they're packed in the syrup. So that's fine to do. Just drain them, rinse them, and then eat the fruit. And that's okay as well.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions about diet and nutrition. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-9455. WILL. We also have a toll-free number. The toll-free number is 800-222-9455. You'll find our guest, Susan Kundrat, on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She also is frequently a contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she's the author of the book 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. Again, those phone numbers, listeners, if you'd like to talk with us, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455. What are the recommendations these days regarding carbohydrates and folks who are diabetic or pre-diabetic?
Well, it'll depend upon the person, himself or herself, and how many calories he or she may need or require mm-hmm. in the day. But in general, we look at carbohydrate counting for someone who's managing blood sugars, and that is a product, well, one carbohydrate would be about 15 grams on a label, 15 grams of carbohydrate. So, for example, if within their plan they have 10 or 12 carbohydrates that they're trying to keep to in a day, for example, which is pretty low, then they'd maybe need to know a carbohydrate would be a grain or a milk or fruit or how that works in. And then looking on labels, it's very helpful because we can see total carbohydrates and where that comes from. Sometimes it can be confusing for people when they're monitoring carbohydrates because some foods market themselves as saying, well, we're not digestible carbohydrates or different types of carbohydrates. But really, we encourage people to look at the total carbohydrates and then trying to find products that are higher in fiber as well because we know that that can delay the breakdown of that sugar and be very helpful too. And so we're looking at total carbohydrates really more than sugars. Certainly, it's still helpful to watch your total sugar intake and not drink soda and things like that. Watch your alcohol intake, particularly this time of year, because all that can affect blood sugars very quickly, sugary drinks and things. But the most important thing really is the total amount of carbohydrate and breaking that down throughout the day. And then also I think it's real important that when someone eats carbohydrate, they're eating a little protein and fat with it. And so it's not just the carb by itself. And that seems to be beneficial too.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener on line one on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Hello. This is a question about, sugar and junk food. I find that the moderation approach is kind of ridiculous for me personally. Cutting those things out has been effective, and, you know, you can lose a lot. At least I was able to lose a lot of weight with the help of a nutritionist. But, you know, having a little bit once in a while just doesn't work. There's some sort of, addictive behavior at work there. And, you know, a little bit at first becomes a little bit more, and it just kind of snowballs. How do you feel on that subject?
Well, I think you bring up a really good point because I think we're all different in how we manage food and particularly desserts and sweets and things in particular. I think I've had a lot of clients who just do better not having them around. And like you say, maybe just not eating sweets or really cutting out sugar or sweetened type foods. And they feel better and they are able to, you know, kind of get away from it. And then they really don't crave it very much either. And so for some people, that does work well. I think the key thing there is that if you can do that and still not feel like you're deprived all the time, that's really important. I think it's really... I think we need to enjoy eating and that we shouldn't feel too deprived. But if that works for someone, I think that can be great. I think that can work fine. And then I think for other people, you know, sometimes I'll set up plans and they may just have 200 or 300 discretionary calories in their plan, and that could be anything. Maybe that's a really good beer one night, and maybe another night that's a brownie, and, you know, whatever they want. And they kind of know how much is enough and how much would be too much according to their plan. And for some people, that works great too, because they can manage it that way. And so probably it's really based more on personality and also perhaps physiologically how your body responds to some of these foods, because I think there's still a lot we don't know about how we respond to sugars and fats and different things, and we certainly don't all respond the same way. So you probably found what works for you. I think the other thing that sometimes is helpful is if people know that for a certain period of time they may be leaving these things out, and I always go back to kind of changes during Lent or that time, you know, maybe if it's for a month period or a 2 week period that you really cut those things out and feel like you can do it for that amount of time. Many people, once they've done it for that amount of time, they get used to eating pretty healthy and they feel good and they maybe have lost a little weight and much easier to maintain it. So that may be a beneficial way to think about it too, sort of in periods of time, what you're doing diet wise and how that affects you is helpful as well.
Let's take another call now. A listener on line four in Burlington. This will be our last call this afternoon. We're running down on time. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. My question is about vitamin D and what the recommended level is. I take a multivitamin, and it gives me right off the bat 500 of vitamin D, but only 220 of calcium. But I need more calcium, so I'm taking... I got a Citracal Petite, and it gives me 500 of vitamin D and 400 of calcium there. And then I've been trying to find just calcium with no vitamin D. Do I need to worry about that, like getting over 1,000 milligrams or 1,000 units of the vitamin D?
Well, probably not. That's now the recommended amount is 1,000 IUs per day of vitamin D. I guess the first thing I would do is, if you haven't already, I would ask your primary care provider to get your vitamin D levels tested so you can know where you are. In this part of the country, many, many people are low in vitamin D. So if our blood levels are low, then 1,000 IUs will not be near enough to bring those levels back up. And that's what we're tending to see, is just a lot of people are low. So that'd be the first thing. But 1,000 IUs is not too much. Based on the recommendations we have now, it would be unusual to think that double that amount would be too much. But, you know, we don't really know for sure how much is too much. We just know that most people are low. And so probably what you're doing makes a lot of sense in terms of the amounts. And then it is very hard to find calcium without the vitamin D, even in a milk product or something, because vitamin D is added because it helps the absorption. But I wouldn't personally be concerned if you took in 1,500 IUs or 2,000 IUs, just because many people, even if they're in the normal range, aren't very high normal vitamin D. That's what we're finding from now. It's finally being studied. So. But I would first make sure you get that level tested so you can see, do you have wiggle room based on the recommendations? And if you're particularly low, then you would need more than that. And your doc could get you an amount that would be appropriate based upon your level.
Okay. There, we'll leave it. Thanks for everyone, to everyone who called, for calling this afternoon. And Susan, maybe we'll chat next month in January. How about that?
2009.
Susan Kundrat joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. She is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's 1:53 Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from Kansas City and Chicago. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Les. Let's take a look at those numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Monday afternoon. Futures in the soft red winter wheat pit today settled at 509.75 on the December contract, the high at 543, the low at 503.5. And December wheat led the futures lower, down 32.75 cents today at 509.75. March wheat futures 561.75 for the high, the low at 22. Settlement price at $5.28, down 33.25. May's at 574 for the high. Low at 535.75. Settlement price at 541.75, down 33 cents on the afternoon. And July wheat, 588, the high, the low at 549.25, the harvest month for 2009 for the soft red settled at $5.54.75, down 33 cents. In Kansas City, December wheat settled 27.25 lower at 535.75 for the hard red, and the spring wheat from Minneapolis at the Grain Exchange was down 21 cents today, a settlement price there at 578.5. December corn futures 352.75, the high, the low at 328.75, a settlement price at 332.75, down 16.75. March 368.5 for the high, the low at 45. Settlement price at 348.75, down 17 cents in the May, 378.25 the high. Low at 356.25, settlement price at $3.60, down 17.25 for the March, or rather May, corn. Now July futures, 389.5, the high, the low at 367, settlement price at 370.75, down 17.75. And next year's December, 414.75 for the top, the bottom at $3.92.25. Settled at 396.25, down 17.25. December oats today up a half cent, 202. The settlement price, the March at 217.5, up a half as well. The high at 35.25, the low at $2.75. And the March oats once again settled at 217.5, up a half for the day. Soy complex, a loss of about 30 to 37 cents across that floor. January in the pit at 882.75 on the high. Low at 841, settlement price at 846, down 37 cents. Remember, we give you the day trade and the overnight, so it's the electronic and the open outcry from last night's session all the way through this afternoon. We call it the whole session for the trade. January, once again, in the bean pit, settled 37 cents lower at $8.46 a bushel. March contract, 890.5, the high, the low at 849, settlement price at 854.25, down 36.75 in the May $8.94 and a quarter for the high, the low at 58 and three quarters. Settlement price there at $8.63 and three quarters, down 36 and a quarter. July futures 9.03 and a half, the high, the low at 8.67 and three quarters. Settlement price at 8.72 and a half, down 35 and a half in the August. 8.76, the high, the low at 76. That's not possible because the settlement price was at 8.74 and a half, and down 35 and a half cents for those August soybeans. November futures 8.96 and a quarter, the high, the low at 8.70 and a half. Settlement price at 8.75 and three quarters. The November soybeans for 2009 settled 30 and a quarter cents lower. December bean meal futures 2.57.50, the high, the low at 2.50.90. A settlement price of $252.30 a ton, down $3.70. January futures at $250.50, down $3.80. December bean oil futures 32.76 for the high today, the low at 30.80. Settlement price at 31.11, down $1.47. And the January soybean oil futures 33.06, the high, the low at 31.08. Settlement price at 31.40. Finished down 150. During the closing market report this afternoon, 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time, we'll talk with Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, where he serves as their senior grains analyst. And then later in that program, the folks from the Andersons will join us to talk about the cash grain market. And along the way, we'll hear from Murray Wise. He's with the Westchester Group right here in Urbana-Champaign. They manage about 115,000 acres of farmland nationwide. We'll talk to him about cash rents. That's all coming up during the closing market report at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Now we turn our attention to what happened today with the livestock contracts in Chicago at the Mercantile Exchange. It was a lower day across the board today. Live cattle, December contract, 86.45, the high, 84.60, the low, 85.45, the settlement, that down 192 and a half. February, 87 even the high, 85.25 the low, 85.72 and a half the settlement, that down 192 and a half. April, 88.75 the high, 87.15 the low, 87.55 the settlement, that down 217 and a half. June live cattle, 84.65 the high, 82.80 the low, 83.12 and a half the settlement, that down 182 and a half. January feeder cattle, 91.02 and a half the high, 89.20 the low, the settlement 89.62 and a half, that down 207 and a half. March 91.55 the high, 89.70 the low, the settlement 89.85, down 237 and a half. April 91.60 the high, 90.30 the low, 90.47 and a half the settlement, that down 227 and a half. May feeder cattle 92.60 the high, 91 even the low, 91.20 the settlement, that down 230. December lean hogs 59.15 the high, 58.30 the low, finishing at 58.72 and a half, that settling down 77 and a half. February 66.85 the high, 65.15 the low, 65.35 the settlement, that down 167 and a half. April lean hogs 73.20 the high, 71.95 the low, the settlement 72.40, that down 110. May lean hogs 80.72 and a half the high, the low 79.70, the settlement 80.62 and a half, that down 87 and a half. And February pork bellies finished down a dime today, 92.75 the high, 89.80 the low, that's 89.80 the low, and 92.22 and a half the settlement, that down 10. The Dow is currently off 405 points at 84.24. The NASDAQ is off 90 at 14.46. The S&P 500 off 52 at 8.44. In New York, nearby crude off 4.23 at $50.20 a barrel. Coming up on 2 o'clock, this is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois.